Want a more fault-tolerant data center? Bring the availability of cloud computing inside your data center with the only server built from the cloud up.
Welcome to IT Time TechNet Radio. I'm your host, Blaine Barton, a senior IT pro evangelist with Microsoft. And today we have a special guest, somebody that I go way back about 16 years ago with, Tim Raines. How you doing, Tim?
Good, Blaine. Great to be here.
Yeah. So Tim's the director of Trustworthy Computing Group here at Microsoft with over 20 years experience in technology across a whole range of disciplines, including engineering, consulting, marketing, and communication roles. And once again, I worked with Tim like 16 years ago on Microsoft certified trainers back in the day, remember, with the authorized technical training centers in Bellevue, Washington. So Tim currently manages all the security, marketing, corporate communications, in the Trustworthy Computing Division here at Microsoft once again. Boy, you do a little bit of everything. Security incident response, threat intelligence, malware protection, security strategy and public policy, operations and development. So you do a whole lot of things in that role, as well as you're also doing, Tim, Microsoft Security Intelligence Reports, right?
You bet.
Cool. Providing a lot of the in-depth analysis on global threat landscape, and then, you know, working on coming up to the end of life for Windows XP. So that's what we're going to talk about today. So with that, Tim, before we get started, I always have a couple of questions that I always ask my interviewees, and that is, what was your very first computer experience?
Oh, wow. Well, that takes me way back. I was pretty fortunate. I had a computer back when I was in grade 5 or 6. So I was learning how to write programs in BASIC back on an Apple II Plus. And then when I went into junior high school, a year or two after that, they had a computer lab full of computers, personal computers, and I got to be part of that. And so I learned how to program at a really young age. Probably 12 or 13, and it just something I've been passionate about my whole life.
That's excellent. You know, I also ask, you know, back in the days of being an MCT and working together, I think it was back in NT4 and doing NT4 workstation, then NT4 troubleshooting. Remember that?
I do.
Out there teaching folks. In fact, interesting, because when I wasn't working for Microsoft, our first client was Microsoft, so it's kind of interesting. Here we are, both in the company. How many years you got now with Microsoft?
Coming on 15.
Wow, 15 years. Yeah, it's amazing how time goes by. So let's get everybody up to speed on you know, this Windows XP end of life. What IT groups, what our customers can do, and to be a little more proactive. I know we only got several days yet to go left of XP support. Maybe kind of drive us through what folks should be gearing up to.
Sure. So, Blaine, let me just walk you through a few of the things that I think that customers should understand about what the end of support for Windows XP means. I get to talk to a lot of customers around the world about this topic and threats and the threat landscape, as we discussed. So I've talked to lots and lots of customers, and I think most of them at this point, the ones that I've talked to, you know, they clearly understand the sort of enhanced risk after April 8th of 2014 when it comes to Windows XP systems. But, you know, as I talk to especially medium and small-sized businesses, it's not as obvious to them what the risks are. And so this is a really good topic, and I think it's very timely. So let me just walk you through a couple of things here. And so if we go to the next slide here, right now, the way that the Microsoft Security Response Center, also called the MSRC, works is a long-standing principle is when you release security updates for software from Microsoft, You want to be able to, you know, protect all of the customers regardless of what version they're using. And so if we find a vulnerability in one version of Windows, for instance, and we go and fix that, we want to make sure that we go and check whether other versions of Windows, whether they're old or newer, also have that vulnerability. We look for variants. We go through a lot of rigorous testing to make sure that we're not missing anything in any one of these operating systems. Because if you release a security update for one operating system, we've seen this over and over again for a number of years. Attackers will go and look at that security update that we've released. They've got tools that will enable them to very quickly reverse engineer that update and then go and check the other operating systems, whether those other operating systems also have that vulnerability that we just patched. So, you know, for the last 10 or 15 years, the MSRC has made sure that, you know, a longstanding principle that they use is to update all versions of affected software simultaneously so that no customer is essentially left out in the cold. They all have access to the security updates that will protect them at the same time. And so that's been the way it's the way that we've been managing Windows XP all this time, as you see on the slide. But what's going to happen on April 8th, 2014, is Windows XP is at the end of its support lifecycle. We've been talking about the support lifecycle since 2002. So Windows XP released in 2001. In 2002, we actually published a lifecycle policy for Windows XP and frankly all of our other products that were around at that same time. And we do this for all of our products. We actually publish what the support lifecycle looks like. This makes it easier for customers to plan how long they have on that platform, whether they're getting hot fixes, security updates, the things that matter to their organization. And so since 2002, we've been talking about this end of support date. And what happened in 2007 as Windows XP came closer to the end of support is we actually looked out and said, okay, this is a really, really popular operating system. This is actually such a huge success story. This operating system has been, you know, used in so many places and so many scenarios. Consumers love it. Businesses love it. It's a real success story. So what we did in 2007 is we actually extended the support lifecycle for Windows XP an additional 2 years. So we actually extended it out to April 8th, 2014. So we extended the typical 10-year security and hotfix lifecycle of this product out an additional 2 years so that, you know, customers that have line of business apps on there or consumers that just love this operating system, it gives them more time to use it. And so over the last couple of years, we've been supplying the same level of support that we supplied, you know, to Windows XP in the first several years of its life. And so as we come to the end of this, though, what we think will happen is when we stop issuing security updates for Windows XP, you know, the attackers are just going to take a closer look at the updates that we are releasing for other versions of the software. So after April 8th, you've got several versions of Windows that are still in support. You've got Windows Vista, Windows 7, and Windows 8. And so what'll happen, you know, on April 8th, 2014, if there are any security updates for Windows XP, they will release them on April 8th, which is the second Tuesday of that month. So it's a regular release date for software security updates from Microsoft. If Windows XP is an affected product for any vulnerabilities, they will release security updates as they typically do on that date, and they'll be distributed all of the same ways they've been distributed over the past several years, including Windows Update and Microsoft Update. Then that's the actual last time that security updates for Windows XP are scheduled to go out via those normal mechanisms. And so after that date, the risk starts to go up of continuing to run Windows XP. Because in May of 2014, the second Tuesday of May, we'll go and release security updates. If there are updates for security updates for any other Windows versions at that point, Vista, Windows 7, Windows 8, what we expect will happen is attackers will go download those security updates, reverse engineer them, find the vulnerabilities that they're fixing, and then just go and test those on Windows XP to see if Windows XP has those vulnerabilities as well. If Windows XP does have those vulnerabilities, what will happen is those attackers will try to write exploit code that will allow them to compromise systems And because those systems are never going to be updated, those Windows XP systems will never have an update to fix that vulnerability, they'll have the ability to go and try to exploit that update, you know, essentially forever. And so it's really important for users of Windows XP after April to understand that as time goes on and more security updates get released for supported versions of Windows, that means that there's more and more of a chance of unpatched vulnerabilities in Windows XP. Now, you might wonder, how often does this, you know, does this scenario really happen? Is it like winning a lottery, or does it happen all the time? And so, to give you some idea, between July of 2012 and July of 2013, you know, Windows XP was an affected product in 45 security bulletins. That means in that 1 year period, we had security updates go out for Windows XP 45 times, of which 30 also affected Windows 7 and Windows 8. So that means 30 out of 45 times Windows 7 and Windows 8 vulnerabilities could have been reverse engineered to find a vulnerability that existed in Windows XP. And so, you know, the chances of attackers doing this after April and into the future get higher and higher and higher as time goes on. So it's really important for people to understand that. And so I often get, you know, asked, well, what about antivirus software? What about mitigations like data execution prevention and ASLR and CHOP and all the different mitigations, memory safety mitigations that are built into the operating system? What about those? Won't those protect me? And the reality is if your trusted computing base, if the actual kernel of the system can't be trusted to give programs reliable information like antivirus. Antivirus relies on APIs to get into the operating system to scan the disk for malware, to scan memory for malware. What a lot of rootkits do is they hook those APIs so that the operating system can't return reliable data to antivirus software or other security products. And so if the operating system is compromised, if attackers are actually able to install rootkits or manipulate those APIs, you can't trust the information that it's going to be reliable going from the operating system into the applications anymore. So, you know, over time, it gets harder and harder and harder for antivirus software to be effective on a platform where, you know, there could be unpatched vulnerabilities in that platform. And so over time, we think that antivirus software and other types of security software will become less and less effective. And so when you take a look at Windows XP, which, you know, I had the ability to work on back in the late 90s here at Microsoft. You know, it was released in 2001, so we were working on it, you know, back in the late 90s, early 2000s. When you take a look at the rigor that has gone into the security mitigation features in Windows Vista, Windows 7, Windows 8, Windows 8 has had, you know, 10 years of evolved security mitigations put into it. All the things that we learned from Windows XP and Windows Vista and Windows 7, the sum of all of that is in Windows 8. And so, you know, what you see here on the slide is just that gives you an idea of all of the stuff that's been layered in, all of those security mitigations that have been layered into the operating system over the years, so that if one of them actually gets bypassed, you know, there's another one that they have to bypass as well. So what this is doing is it doesn't ensure that the system can't be compromised. It just makes it harder and harder and harder for attackers to compromise the system. So it raises the cost of exploitation to the attackers. And so the strategy is to raise the cost so high, the technical cost of getting onto a system, making it so high that they don't bother. They move on and try to do other things. And that's really what the newer operating systems are doing. So there's a bunch of resources that we've published. We've published a couple of blogs. You can see here on the slide the top URL. There's to a blog that I did in August of 2013. The Windows product group has also done some blogging here, the Windows Springboard series, to give you some idea of some things that you can do to migrate from Windows XP to newer, more modern operating systems like Windows 7 and Windows 8. And then we published a white paper on the, sort of the security science of exploitation that shows you that you know, essentially the mitigations that we built into Windows XP 12 years ago, attackers are now able to bypass a lot of those mitigations because they're putting the time and energy, and they have more modern tools to do this with as well. They're now routinely bypassing a mitigation like DEP. And so you really do need those layers of mitigations that I mentioned earlier.
Well, that was excellent, Tim. Thanks. And you know, it's not that people plan to fail. Is that they fail to plan. So let's talk a little about what they can do, you know, going forward if they're on XP today. But also, I'm interested in, like, what really, like, motivates cyber attackers, right, over this past decade?
Right. You know, I think a lot of people that aren't security professionals, when they think of cyber attackers, they think back to the sort of 2003, 2004 era where you had a bunch of people really focused on gaining notoriety in the industry. So being able to successfully attack software on a very large scale, all they're really looking for is notoriety, to become famous, even though, you know, they're hiding in the shadows. So fast forward, you know, here we are 10, 12 years later, and what we're seeing is a broader range of motivations other than just notoriety. So those people are still out there that would like to prove that, you know, that they're able to do things with technology that it really wasn't designed to do. But there's also people out there that are motivated by, you know, several things. One of them is profit. So in the 2005, 2006, 2007 era, that's where we really saw a lot of downloader droppers, Trojan downloader droppers that were really focused on getting on the systems, compromising them, and then allowing them to be remote controlled in a botnet. Then they would lease those botnets out to people for sums of money in order to do spam projects, the user storage processor, you know, their network connections to do various types of projects for them, including compromise as many systems as possible. Those people that are focused on profit are still out there. There's lots and lots of them. Then we see a lot of other types of motivations. Cyber warfare, you've seen that in the news several times over the last 4 or 5 years. We've got cyber espionage, both military espionage and economic espionage. We see hacktivism, so people that are attacking organizations because they don't like what those organizations are doing or, you know, how they're doing business. There's a whole range of sort of activist philosophical concepts and topics that they're focused on, and anyone can be a target in those, you know, in those types of attacks. So really what's happened is attackers have diversified what motivates them, and subsequently they've also diversified the types of tactics and strategies they use to try to compromise systems.
Yeah, we've seen, you know, we've seen quite a few, at least in my lifetime, a good handful of really nasty viruses, right? I mean, back in 1999, you know, Melissa virus, or in 2000, the love letter, right? And the list goes on and on. And so as we move through kind of the years, through Slammer, right, virus, and all the way up to where we're at today, you know, we also see you know, people's computers getting taken over by what people presume as the FBI, right? Do they lock your screen, and then they have a camera, and the camera comes on, takes a picture, and then they hold you somewhat hostage until you go down to your nearest Walgreens and buy a money pack and be able to unlock the computer. Can you kind of explain a little bit about, you know, the motivation there, right, is obviously dollars, but that's what's right. Kind of happening, what's happening, say, in today's world going forward?
Sure. So that's actually a very common type of malware that we see now called ransomware. Over the last 3 or 4 years, the, you know, amount of that type of malware that we've seen has grown consistently. And earlier this year, I did a blog post on ransomware that called attention to this specifically in Western Europe. We saw between Western Europe and the United States that ransomware detections were going way, way up, and more people were getting taken advantage of. And so essentially what happens is this stuff will make it onto your system one of many different ways. Again, if you're not patching your system with security updates, they can get on through unpatched vulnerabilities. They can fool you into downloading it by saying it's one thing and it's there to protect your system, or you're downloading a document, or you go to a web page, that's what we call drive-by download site, And what happens when you visit that page, they try a whole bunch of exploits running them against your system. If you're not patched for all of the vulnerabilities that those exploits that, you know, try to exploit, then your system gets owned and they'll download ransomware onto the system. And so what happens is they'll either lock your desktop and say that they're from the FBI, and they can actually say that they're from the regional authority, because this stuff can be localized. So if you're in Western Europe, you know, they're telling you that they're from Interpol, or they're telling you, you know, they're from some local law enforcement agency, so that it looks more authentic. And so they'll tell you, oh, you've been visiting bad sites, or you've done something illegal. We're locking your desktop. We need you to go and send money to this particular place, and then they go and pick it up. The other thing that we've seen more and more is ransomware that encrypts the hard drive of the system. And so essentially you've got all of your important files on the hard drive of your computer. Once ransomware makes it onto your system, it'll encrypt all of those files so that now you can't get access to them. And in order to get access to them, you know, the attackers are demanding a ransom. They're saying, pay us $200, $300, $400, and we will then send you the key to decrypt those files. Otherwise, you're not getting them back. And of course, since you are dealing with criminals, you can't be sure whether you pay the money, whether you're going to get the files back. And I've heard a range of stories between people that say, no, I paid the money and I didn't get any kind of decryption key. I lost my files and my money. To, oh, they decrypted some of the files for me. To, oh, they decrypted all the files for me. So the thing you need to do is prepare for that. Because Windows XP, the end of support is coming for it, these attackers are going to have more opportunity to install ransomware on systems, because now you're going to have unpatched vulnerabilities on Windows XP moving forward after April. And so, you know, you really have to be vigilant. Backing up your files is the best protection against this type of threat. Of course, running up-to-date antivirus software on your system is also a really good layer of protection. But remember, after April on Windows XP, all of these things start to become less and less effective. So backups is really your best, you know, offline backups is your best bet to protect yourself against that type of threat.
Sounds like good information for folks, and I'm hopefully they're tuning into IT Time TechNet Radio. So what I'd like to do now is maybe kind of go through a really quick list as we wrap things up here, maybe like through the risks, starting with the first risk and then maybe some guidance around that risk.
Sure. So, you know, I've been talking about security for many years, and one thing to realize is attackers, they don't really care anymore what type of system you're running. They don't care whether it's a laptop, a phone, or any other type of device. They're really just trying to compromise as many systems as possible and then use those systems, as I said, based on what their motivation is. And so, you know, one thing to understand is that if you have a device that surfs the internet and sends and receives email, then you are a potential target for attackers. Because you know, back in 2003-2004 timeframe, when Microsoft turned the Windows firewall on Windows XP systems, that was really a game changer. That meant that all of those worm attacks that we saw back in 2003 that would just come and hit the system, and then the system, you know, there's no user interaction involved. When you turn the firewall on the system, you know, the worms can't get to the ports that might have vulnerable services listening on them. So that was a game changer. What that forced attackers to do is come up with ways that rely on the user to go out to the internet and bring the badness through the firewall. And that's why I say, you know, if it sends and receives email and surfs the internet, you know, you have to be more vigilant, because you're essentially, when you're going out to the internet and bringing web pages back onto your system, into your browser, doesn't matter who makes your browser, and you're bringing email through the firewall onto the system and looking at it in an email program, doesn't matter who makes the email program, your potential to be attacked. And so the way this typically works, for instance, if you're surfing the internet, I mentioned drive-by download pages before. Attackers will set up a page or compromise a really popular page and put a bunch of exploits on there. And again, they don't care who makes the operating system. They can have exploits for all sorts of software, Microsoft software. You can have exploits up there for Linux. You can have exploits up there for different browsers. It really doesn't matter who makes the software. They don't care. Again, they're just trying to compromise as many systems as possible. So sending in, or surfing the internet, will become more risky on Windows XP systems after April, because now you'll have unpatched vulnerabilities on the system. And as you go out and surf the internet, if you're indiscriminate about where you're going, you could end up on one of these pages that's a drive-by download page, and you can't tell that it's a drive-by download page with the naked eye, because those attacks are the size of a pixel. So just by loading up the page, and again, it doesn't matter what browser you're using, whether it's Internet Explorer, Chrome, Safari, there are vulnerabilities on pages for all of these products. Just by loading up the page, if your system is not patched for all of that software, your system can get owned. And so what you need to do is move to a modern operating system that'll protect you from those types of attacks and keep that system updated, which makes it much, much harder for that attack to be successful. So again, after April, Windows XP is going to be a lot easier to attack via these drive-by download attack pages. The other thing I mentioned, sending and receiving mail. So attackers rely on mail a lot to try to successfully compromise systems, because what they do is they'll send you a piece of email with a URL, a hyperlink, that will go to one of those drive-by download pages that I just talked about. When you click on that link and go to that site, then you get exposed to all those exploits. So they're using email to lead you to one of these attack web pages. The other thing they can do in email, obviously, is send you attachments. Those attachments can be malicious. And so when you double-click on the attachment to open it up because it looks like it's a document or a video or what have you, it's actually malformed to take advantage of an unpatched vulnerability that you have on your system. Same scenario. You brought it through the firewall. You opened it up. The computer's designed to do what you ask it to do, and they're relying on that. They're trying to trick you into installing malware on your system. These are very, very common ways for systems to get compromised today. After April, the risk goes up on XP systems because now you could potentially have unpatched vulnerabilities on those systems. Removable drives, like USB drives, this is one of the top ways that Windows XP systems have been compromised over the last 2 or 3 years. There's a family of threats called auto-run threats. Auto-run threats are typically auto-run worms or auto-run Trojans that rely on you, again, to plug in a USB drive or a movable drive, and then they trick you into installing malware on your system because a UI pops up and says, what would you like to do with the drive that you just plugged into the system? Do you want to browse it? Do you want to play video? What is it that you want to do with the content on that drive? And what they do is they manipulate that UI to trick you into clicking on, oh, I just want to browse the files that are on here, and you're really clicking on a URL that says run this file, and that file is malware that will go and install itself and then download more malware from the internet onto your system. That is actually the number one way that Windows XP systems have been getting compromised, as I said, for the last couple of years. The other thing is, I mentioned worms. You mentioned it yourself, Blaine, all of those worms that were around back in 2003, 2004. I mentioned turning on the firewall is a game changer because it stops those worms from getting to exposed ports. But in some organizations, some businesses that I've talked to, they don't turn on the Windows firewall because it makes it harder for them to do administration and connect to services that they want to connect to. So threats, there's a family of threats actually called Conficker, which has been around for 5 years. That type of threat relies on auto-run feature abuse across the network. So it actually does the auto-run thing as if you were going to, you know, put in a USB drive, but it does it across the network just by browsing file shares inside your organization. So my point here is that Conficker inside enterprises has been one of the top threats for 5 years, and security professionals know all about it. It's just a very difficult threat to get rid of once it's inside your environment. In environments that are going to run Windows XP after April, that type of threat, a worm that uses unpatched vulnerabilities inside of your network, that becomes more probable, and it's a more effective way to attack systems that don't have firewalls turned on. So here, you know, those are some of the top threats, Blaine, that I think people need to be aware of and concerned with if they don't have a plan to move off Windows XP after April of 2014.
Yeah, excellent information. Now, ladies and gentlemen, Tim Raines is director of Trustworthy Computing Group, Microsoft. And it's interesting how you say if you're running an email program or surfing the internet, then you could be a victim of these nasty grams. That's almost everybody that's using computers, right? They're always on the internet or they're doing some kind of mail. So,
the good news, Blaine, is that it's really easy to make it much, much harder for those attacks to succeed, right? So if they have the firewall turned on that comes with Windows for free, and it's turned on by default. So if they don't turn it off or have a piece of software turn it off on them, that's a really, really good protection. If they run up-to-date antivirus, and again, you can get Microsoft Security Essentials on Windows Vista, Windows 7, Windows 8. In Windows 8, you actually have Windows Defender that is built into the operating system that does full antivirus support. So whoever you get your antivirus from, whether it's Symantec, McAfee, F-Secure, whomever, get it from a trusted source and keep it up to date, because all of them will offer you some protection from these types of attacks. And then social engineering. A lot of the threats that we talked about here are social engineering, where the attackers are trying to trick the user into taking some action that will lower the security of the system or install malware on the system that will then download more malware. So social engineering, just being aware of these types of attacks, that they're coming to you through email and they can get at you through the internet when you're surfing the internet, just knowing that will help you with, you know, change your behavior and be just more aware of the type of attack. And that is definitely helpful.
So let's just say they've been owned. Right? They've been hit. They got the virus. They got the malware. They got the ransomware, what have you. To kind of close things up and wrap things up here on IT Time, you know, how do they fix it? What do they do? Do they reinstall? Do they move to the next operating system? Do they, you know, of course, back up their files? It's critical. Do they use System Restore? Do they use other tools that are available? Can you shine some light there?
Sure. So, you know, for the most part, unless you've got encrypted files from ransomware, you can typically clean a system with antivirus software. So that, you know, the best defense is really to prevent it from installing in the first place. But let's say that you weren't successful at preventing installation. There's a couple of tools that you can use. One of them is called Windows Defender Offline. What Windows Defender Offline is really a version of Windows Defender that gets burned to a DVD. And what happens is you'll boot your system that's infected with malware off that DVD. The DVD will start up and actually run an operating system and Windows Defender and scan the drive and find the malware that might be hiding from the operating system when it's up and running. And so because you're running an operating system off of a DVD, and it's scanning, you know, the hard drive of your system for malware, yeah, that's a really effective way at finding infections that might be hiding from the antivirus in the operating system that's running on your system. So Windows Defender Offline is a really effective way of dealing with a lot of those threats.
Okay. Excellent. Tim, it's a pleasure having you on IT Time TechNet Radio. It's been 16 years since we were working together in the past, but you're doing an excellent job in the Trustworthy Computing Group. I see your blogs. I read all the stuff you put out there. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't been reading his blog, you definitely need to go to the URL listed here at the bottom of the screen. So with that, Tim, any last words?
Hey, Blaine, it's always a pleasure. One of these days I'm going to make it down to Florida and we can sit in the sun together.
Good. No, I'll take you out and we'll do a what we call an offshore development. It's it's basically we do work offshore and we try to catch fish. So when you're down in this part of the neck of the woods, give me a call. I'd love to take you out. So with that, Tim, once again, Tim Raines is Director of Trustworthy Computing Group here at Microsoft. And with that, Blaine Barton, thanks for tuning in to IT Time TechNet Radio. And with that, it's a wrap.